dead at Cecile. A shiny white Cadillac comes to carry you off to be Tinkerbell on TV, but your precious little girl, Ludibell, is standing at the door in her costume, waiting for you to take her to school talent night. What would you do?
That's easy, Vonetta said. I get in the shiny white Cadillac with my matching vanity bag and luggage.
And what about your little girl in her costume? I asked.
Yeah, what about Ludibell in her costume, wanting to dance for her mama?
Each and every one of us knew the feeling of having no mother clapping for us in the audience. Only Big Ma and sometimes Papa when he came home from work in time. Crowy and Showy Vonetta said,
First of all, I wouldn't dare name her anything as silly as Ludibell. And my little girl would be happy I was a Disneyland movie star. She would tell her jealous friends at school, There goes my mother on TV. I bet your mother just fries pork chops and wrings wet clothes. My mother is on TV flying around in blue fairy dust, waving a magical wand in a cute sparkly outfit.
The magic of Disneyland had won Fern over to Vonetta's side. It was all of that blue fairy dust and magical wand stuff. Fern's eyes twinkled as she imagined having a colored fairy mother. I was looking to get Vonetta's goat, but I only ended up losing Fern, and Vonetta was her old self.
And that's why you're like Cecile. You want to be a fairy on TV more than you care how your kids will feel and if they miss you.
Do not, and do too, went on between us until Cecile stomped back to the room and said,
Cut that crap out!
Movable type.
We had another long day at the center. When I came into the kitchen to make spaghetti that evening, there was a stool by the stove. It was like everything else Cecile brought into her green stucco house. Secondhand. Still, it was unexpected, and I welcomed it. I normally stood by the stove quietly while the food cooked. My feet always ached, but I never complained. Instead, I shifted my weight from one foot to the other and learned to make quick cooking meals. Cecile had allowed me inside her kitchen. She'd let me cook dinner, wash dishes, and clean up after myself. But she didn't really want me in there with her. She didn't want me stretching my neck over her way, ripping open the piece with any talking. The stool made things different. It was an invitation for me to sit down and be there. Not talk, just cook. Be. As the spaghetti boiled, pictures flashed in and out of my mind. Flashes of sitting with Cecile and being quiet. It was the welcome that had brought me back. That I'd sat with her before and it was all right. Not in this kitchen, but in the kitchen in Brooklyn. Back when Sarah Vaughn filled the house with her smoky voice, Vonetta was far away crying to be picked up, and Cecile's stomach was big with Fern. I wouldn't be exaggerating if I said I was born knowing what to do when I sat with Cecile. Don't cry. Stay quiet. Want nothing. I could talk, but I'd learned that as long as I was quiet, I was allowed to stay with her while she tapped against the wall with her pencil, wrote and wrote, and said her rhymes over and over. Don't cry. Stay quiet. Want nothing. Then Fern had come, and days later, Cecile left. Big Ma had moved in and told Pa,
That gal's dumb as a dry pump,
meaning me. Cecile wouldn't have minded if I had been born deaf and mute, but Cecile was gone. Big Ma was another story. I quickly learned to speak up around Big Ma. After we ate our spaghetti, I washed the dishes and wiped the sink down. Cecile said,
I'd let you help me if your hands were clean.
My hands were already clean. I just finished washing dishes. But I soaped them with dishwashing liquid, then rinsed and dried them.
Stand over here.
I stood where she told me. For
For a long while, that was all she said, that I stand right there. I looked down on a flat frame with wooden blocks. On the wooden blocks were metal letters facing backward. Backward? They spelled out words line by line. But you'd have to be able to read backward to read the lines. I wanted to be able to read them. On the counter next to the printing machine was a newly inked sheet of paper with words printed in the right direction.
Movable type.
Push here, I move. There. Push there, I move. Two squares over, by those squares, from under my feet I land on the free square. Raise my rent. I, Pika Elite, Courier, Sans Serif, Pack Light, Leave Swift. I'm that type. I move. Nzila. She took the sheet and hung it up to dry. I'm going to press down and roll the crank, she said. I figured I would catch on. She turned the lever on the side of the printing machine. Her weight pressed into the machine and down on the metal and paper. The roller spun slowly. The paper pushed its way out onto the tray of backward letters. When the paper was fully inked, I believe she was pleased. Not that she was smiling or jolly or singing, but she liked what she'd done. She studied her printed sheet and held it up to the light. The poem in black ink. Her name, Nzila, in special-shaped letters. Large, curved, lovely, and green. I thought about Cecile's poem. I figured it was about how she was the type to not be still. But I believe she liked this green stucco house. I think she liked being in this kitchen, mothering and praying over this big machine and these blocks of backward letters. This was Cecile being happy. See this here? I must have made a move like I was going to touch it. Cecile spoke sharply. I said see, not touch. See. I nodded and put my hands behind my back. I was used to busy hands, to doing. I did what she said. I looked.
Those are the rollers. You feed the paper through the rollers. You feed it even. If it's crooked, it's a waste of paper. You crank it steady or it's a waste of paper. Waste of ink.
I watched her feed the paper between the rollers and turn the crank. Each time the ink spread evenly on the paper. She hung each sheet to dry.
Go ahead.
She pointed to the paper and the rollers and the crank. I almost didn't move.
Come on, let's see if you can follow directions.
I took a sheet from the paper stack and held it from end to end so it would go in even. No matter how much I told myself to keep steady, my hands made the paper shake. I was mad at my own hands. I didn't want Cecile to think I was afraid of doing wrong, but I was. I didn't look up at her to see if I had done right in her eyes. I just did what she said and turned the crank slow, hard, and steady until the paper came out on the other side, I hoped, fully inked. She held up my newly printed sheet and pointed to a spot on the end in Nzila that missed the rollers. She shook her head.
A waste of paper.
San Francisco treat. Cecile didn't care where we went or what we did on Saturdays and Sundays, as long as we stayed far away from her peace and quiet. Our first weekend, we had played Go Fish and tic-tac-toe in our room and waited for Cecile to announce that we were going to some adventurous place that existed only in California. By the second weekend, I knew we had to have a plan. Since the sun rose high that Saturday, I figured it was a good day to go to the beach and collect seashells for souvenirs. Vonetta, Fern, and I had put on our bathing suits and sunglasses, and I'd asked Cecile to take us to the beach. I had never spoken Martian to someone and had them give me the look that could only be given to a Martian. Instead of answering our question, Cecile gave us a look that said, "Who are you and what planet did y'all come from?" I ended up taking my sisters to the city pool, where we swam and splashed around without thinking about all that chlorine water knotting up our hair. When we'd come back to her house smelling like chlorine, I asked Cecile if I could use her hot comb to press our hair, seeing how naughty it got. I'd expected she'd say no outright because I'd smoke up her precious workplace with hair burning from the hot comb. In fact, I'd expected a no followed by an I didn't send for y'all in the first place. It hadn't occurred to me that Cecile didn't own a hot comb or curling iron, even though that fact was as big and thick as her unpressed braids. She'd said,
"Naughty? Your hair ain't naughty. It ain't misbehaving. It's doing what God meant it to do."
That would have been news to Big Ma. We never entered the house of God without our hair pressed and smelling of Dixie Peach hair grease. For our third Saturday in Oakland, I had a better plan. I told my sisters, "We're going on an excursion." Miss Merriam-Webster would have been proud. Excursion. To Vonetta's and Fern's uncomprehending faces, I said, "We're taking a bus ride to our own adventure." It didn't make sense to fly 3,000 miles to the land of Mickey Mouse, movie stars, and all your sun and not see anything but Black Panthers, police cars, and poor black people. I wasn't foolish enough to set out for Hollywood, Disneyland, or the beach where they filmed Happening 68 with rock and rollers like Paul Revere and the Raiders. Instead, I planned that we would spend our nearly last Saturday in California traveling across the bay to San Francisco to ride a cable car and see Chinatown, Fisherman's Wharf, and the Golden Gate Bridge. Now that was an excursion worthy of a back-to-school essay. Even if we didn't have a camera to take pictures of us on our adventure, we would know we'd been there. I told my sisters, "Don't say a word. Just let me do all the talking." Even though I knew Cecile didn't care, I didn't want her to suddenly take an interest in us and ask a lot of questions. If she asked questions, I'd have to spin a lot of straw, and I couldn't spin a lot of straw and look her in the face the way I'd like to. Like I'm 11 going on 12, and I know what I'm doing. "Cecile, we need money. I have all-day activities planned, and we have to eat while we're out doing our activities."
"Yeah, gotta eat."
I turned to Fern.
"Don't say no more, Fern."
She got it. "If I pour cereal for them before we go," I said, "I'll only need change for the bus and some lunch money and a little extra if you want us gone long." Cecile almost raised an eyebrow, but not quite. She figured we were up to something, but probably didn't want to know the details. She reached into her man's pants and poured a lot of nickels, dimes, pennies, and some quarters into my hands. I needed both hands to get every coin. She dealt out 11 single dollars from a wad of bills and gave me those also. I was so giddy about having all of that money, I just dumped it in my shoulder bag. I could sort it out later. Just by the weight of the silver and copper, I knew we had more than the $15 I'd counted on us getting. I ate my cereal and washed the dishes with my shoulder bag slung around my neck, Brooklyn style. The best way to lose your money is to hold your bag off the shoulder. But this way, with the bag slung crosswise, you were ready for anything. As we were walking out the door, excited about our excursion, Cecile called out, "I'm not coming down to no police station if you're out there stealing. Y'all have to spend the night in jail." That was as good a be safe and have a good time as we were going to get from Cecile. We took it and left. Outside, the yards and streets were filled with screaming kids playing. It was all I could do to keep Vonetta and Fern in line for my fully planned excursion. I'd worked too hard writing everything down to have them not want to go. I'd asked Sister Pat about the bus and cable car. I'd gotten all the sightseeing information from the library. I wasn't about to let a kickball game and some Barbie tea parties throw mile-long pouts on Vonetta and Fern because they wanted to stay here in Blackpore, Oakland.
Then the worst possible thing happened. Hirohito came rambling up to us on his homemade go-kart. He skidded to a stop using his high-top sneakers, right at Vonetta's feet. She squealed and laughed and said, "What you know, Hirohito?" That was some cute thing she and Janice Engton came up with. I was sick of hearing it.
"Delphine, want to watch me fly down that hill?"
"No," I said, while my sisters screamed,
"Yes."
I glanced at my Timex.
"Don't stand there watching Hirohito on his go-kart," it said. "The East Bay bus leaves in 12 minutes. You don't have time for that."
Vonetta and Fern folded their arms and wouldn't budge. They watched Hirohito do that run and flop onto the flying tee and go bumpity-bump down the hill. When he neared the end of the hill, he dragged his sneakers like Fred Flintstone and came to a full stop. Then he jumped up and turned to us, waving. Vonetta and Fern waved back.
"Let's see him do it again," Vonetta said.
"It's a boy going down the hill," I said. "We've seen it already. Let's go." I couldn't say it was thrilling. How he jumped on that board thing and rolled down the hill, twisting the tee left and right and then swerving it around. I couldn't say how I admired him for not crying about his father being in prison and for trying to be a normal kid. If you wanted to call Hirohito Woods normal. I certainly didn't want Vonetta to get the wrong idea and think I was as stuck on Hirohito as she and Janice were. Because I wasn't. He was just a boy, and I didn't want to miss the bus to our adventure. Our bus pushed out of poor and black Oakland, where lines formed for free breakfasts and men stood around because there were no jobs and too much liquor. We were glad to be going. Each of us looked out and off into different directions, taking in all that we could. Finally, we were on our way to an adventure. I watched Fern, glued to the bus window and singing to herself. I wondered if she missed Miss Patty Cake at all. How she loved, loved, loved Miss Patty Cake long before she could walk. She teethed on Miss Patty Cake's arms and legs, ate her hair when she didn't know better, squeezed her, slept with her, fed her, and sang to her. 7 years of loving Miss Patty Cake, and now not one mention of her. I can study every move Fern makes and still not completely know her. There are just things I don't understand about her the way I understand Vonetta. After Miss Patty Cake had been damaged and put away, I slept lightly, expecting Fern to awaken during the night, missing her true love. Not that I wanted Fern to be heartbroken. I didn't want her to love someone all her life and then not love or want them at all. Even if her someone was a doll. That was no way to be. I wanted to say something to Fern, but then she cupped her hand around her mouth and squealed and oh, like she'd seen something bad, like a naked lady running down the street. It was that kind of an ooh squeal. "What, Fern?" Her eyes stayed big, her hand over her mouth. Vonetta and I kept going. "What, Fern? What, Fern?" She swallowed a gulp of air and uncupped her mouth. "I saw something." She said it again and had gone from agog to being pleased with herself. "I saw something." She clapped to the beat. Clap, 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 clap. No matter how much we asked, Fern shook her head no, clapped her hands, and sang her song. "I saw something." Fern was pleased she had seen something. Vonetta was sure she hadn't seen a thing. And I remembered he had said Delphine. "Delphine, want to watch me fly down that hill?" Wish we had a camera. Once we arrived in San Francisco, Fern stopped singing "I Saw Something," and we stopped asking her to tell us what she had seen. We got off the bus and were greeted by hippies hanging out by the bus stop. It wasn't right to stare at them like they were in an exhibit, but we couldn't help it. We didn't see many hippies in Brooklyn, not where we lived, and there was a whole tribe of them before us. all kinds of mostly white hippies with long hanging hair. You couldn't miss the guy in the green, red, and white Mexican poncho or the moppy hair covering his face. I'd have called it an afro, except it was on a white guy's head.
I wondered if that made a difference.
The hippies sat on the grass. One read a small book. Three girls swayed while Poncho Man played his guitar. They must have been out protesting and were done for the day. Their signs lay on the grass. Peace. Ban the draft. Make love, not war. I wish we had a camera.
Peace, sweet soul sisters.
Poncho Man dipped his head as if pointing to his open guitar case. I don't know what made me say it, but instead of Groovy Man or Peace, I said, Power to the people. Then Vendetta said, Free Huey. And Fern said, Yeah, Free Huey Newton. That was when we met her, the flower girl. We had finally seen one. There were all kinds of songs on the radio about hippie girls with flowers in their hair. She had daisies in her hair, and she drifted over to us, her eyes all dreamy as she danced in her flowing, paint-splattered dress. She took a daisy from her hair and gave it to Fern. Then she had to give one to Vonetta because Vonetta wasn't about to be overlooked.
Peace is power, sweet soul sisters.
We wanted to crack up, but save that for later. We took the flowers and dropped 2 nickels and 5 pennies in Poncho Man's guitar case. Even though I could have figured it out, I asked him where Grant Street was. He pointed east. We gave the hippies the peace sign and the power sign and walked over to Grant Street. We were excited by the sight of metal rails in the street. The cable car was second on my list of activities. Our first activity was sightseeing in Chinatown. You know when you're in Chinatown. The buildings are just like they are in China. That's a temple, I told my sisters. I had seen the pictures in National Geographic magazine and in the encyclopedia. Nothing compared to actually seeing the roofs, like tiled lampshades or hats. Dragons of every color. Gold, red, blue, green, pink. Big heads with large fangs. Big eyes, monstrous paws. We needed a camera. We shared a plate of dumplings and drank free tea. None of us could keep the dumplings between the chopsticks, so we used forks. After that, we found a place where all they did was make fortune cookies. They let us come in and watch the lady slip fortunes inside flat yellow cookie dough and then fold the dough over. We bought 10 fortune cookies for $1. Our first fortune said, You will travel far. I said, We already did. Still, I put each pink and white strip of paper in my shoulder bag as souvenirs. Now we could say we had real Chinese fortune cookies in Chinatown. We gawked at all the window offerings. Green statues that I learned were carved jade. China dolls, fans, silk and satin dresses with Nehru collars. I almost felt bad about not having more money to spend. I want a kimono, Vonetta declared.
Me too, a blue one, Fern said.
A kimono is Japanese, I said, as if I knew the difference. And we're in Chinatown.
It's the same thing, Vonetta said. And I want one.
It is not, I told her. And we have $5 exactly for souvenirs, so you're out of luck. While we were arguing about what was Chinese and what was Japanese, I noticed this family of 5 tall blonde people standing near us. I didn't eyeball them dead on, but I knew they were staring at us. My heart thumped fast. It was happening. That bad thing that happened to kids who went on excursions without their mother. I tried to shush Vonetta, who thought she was winning our disagreement. I had to get my sisters away from these starers. And then, what would I tell the police when they asked about our mother? We were cooked. When I turned, I found the 5 people smiling at us, their faces made long by high cheekbones and long white teeth. They waved. I'd seen white people before. On TV, at school, everywhere. These people didn't look like any white people I'd ever seen. Even their skin was paler, their hair more white than yellow. I listened as they spoke to one another, probably about us, using flugel-schlugel words. Then instead of taking pictures of all the Chinese people and the temples and dragons, they pointed their cameras at us. Vanetta started to pose movie star style with one hand behind her head and the other on her slim hip. I grabbed Vanetta's and Fern's hands and said, "Come on." I checked my Timex. It was almost 1 o'clock. That meant our time in Chinatown was up and we had to go on to our next activity. A ride on the cable car. We dashed over to where metal rails ran along the street and waited. Sure enough, at 1 o'clock on the nose, we were on to our next activity. A cable car ride from the tip-top of Chinatown all the way down to Fisherman's Wharf. We climbed aboard and I paid our fare. We stood because standing would be more fun going down that hill. And what a hill it was. It was a thrilling look down, down, down. The streets rolled like a dancing dragon. Hirohito didn't know the first thing about a hill. We needed a camera to get this hill. How steep? How long? We rode it all the way down to the wharf, cheering with every clang of the bell. We were now near the wharf. There were palm trees, real palm trees with sturdy trunks. Down here, palm trees made sense. They stood as palm trees were supposed to stand. Reaching up to the sun, branches spread out wide. Not like a sickly child, too small and slouched over in someone's yard in Black Oakland. When we got off, we could see the Golden Gate Bridge perfectly well, but we took turns looking through the telescope right there on the walkway. Gazing out to the bridge, I felt what I almost felt on the airplane. It was the pure excitement of seeing the world. Even the seagulls were seagullier than the ones that flew and squawked around Coney Island. These wide-winged birds seemed bigger and majestic, both close up and far away. Or maybe it was that we could see and smell the ocean and the tar, salt, and wood from the wharf. I breathed in deep to get it all. Too bad there was no way to capture the wharf smell in a jar to take with me. For a minute, I forgot I was with my sisters. Then I remembered what Papa had said, and I stopped myself from falling into the whiff of salt air and flying off with the seagulls like some dreamy flower girl. I was happy to be there, and that had to be good enough. There was no need to get glaze-eyed and forgetful. We stopped in a gift shop on the wharf. The man behind the counter set his eyes on us really hard. At first, I thought it was because we were by ourselves, so I whispered to Vonetta and Fern to be extra well-behaved. But then I heard Cecile's last words in my head. His hard stare was for the other reason store clerk's eyes never let up. We were black kids, and he expected us to be in his gift shop to steal. When he asked us what we wanted, I answered him like I was at the center, repeating after Sister Mukumbu or Sister Pat. We are citizens, and we demand respect. I grabbed Fern by the hand and said, "Let's go." I had that Black Panther stuff in me, and it was pouring out at every turn. I figured it was all right. Papa wouldn't have wanted me to spend our money where we weren't treated with respect. But I was sure Big Ma would have wanted us to say, "Yes, sir," and "Please, sir," to show him we were just as civilized as everyone else. We walked farther down the wharf and found an old lady with a wooden cart to buy our souvenirs from. She carried mostly postcards, silver spoons, thimbles, and tiny drinking glasses that said, "Welcome to San Francisco." Her cart wasn't as nice as the gift shop, but she was toothless and happy to get our nickels and dimes. Since we didn't have a camera, I thought buying 10 postcards for 50 cents would be the next best thing. I told my sisters to each pick out 3 postcards. One to keep as a reminder of our San Francisco excursion, one to mail to Pa and Big Ma, and one to send to Uncle Darnell in Vietnam. I'd figure out later what we'd do with the leftover postcard. At least now we finally had something to show for flying all the way to California. We took the cable car to the bus stop and took the East Bay bus back to Oakland. We talked and talked about all the things we had seen, and the hippies, and the tall blonde white people, and the red and golden dragons, and the steep hills, and the cable cars, and seagulls, and dumplings, and everything. Wouldn't Cecile be surprised when we told her where we went? Then I felt bad because we didn't get her anything from the souvenir cart. I hadn't thought of her at all, and guilt began to have its way with me. I told my sisters, "We're selfish. We didn't buy anything for Cecile." Before we got too quiet, stewing in our selfishness, Vonetta said, "She wouldn't want it anyway." Good old Vonetta. Fern and I agreed with her. Surely wouldn't. In a way, I was glad to be back in Black Oakland, the sun still shining. As much as I loved our adventure, I was always on the lookout in between, just looking. Here, I knew where everything was. The center, the park, the library, the city pool, Safeway, and Mean Lady Meigs. No one stared, unless they were staring because they didn't like your shoes or your hairstyle. Not because you were Black or they thought you were stealing. As much as we needed to go off and have our California adventure, it was nice to be back, even if it wasn't our real home. I still carried my shoulder bag Brooklyn style, but it was now lighter, and I wasn't worried. We stopped inside Mean Lady Meigs and gave her all the change we had left except for $2 bills. "What can we get with this?" Mean Lady Meigs yelled something mean back to the kitchen, and in 10 minutes we had a brown bag smelling of fried rice and chicken wings. I figured one day of takeout food wouldn't hurt anything. But honestly, I was too tired and happy to cook. I was anxious to tell Cecile all about our vacation day. I wanted to show off how well I had planned everything down to the minute that I knew what to do, and I wanted to see if she cared. We were a block away from the green stucco house, chatting and laughing. Then we stopped walking, all 3 of us. There were 3 police cars parked outside of Cecile's house, one in the driveway and 2 along the curb. Policemen lined the walk. Lights flashed on top of their cars onto the streets. Red, white, and blue lights everywhere. We inched up, the happiness knocked out of us. Cecile and 2 Black Panthers, hands behind their backs, handcuffed, being led out of the house and down the walkway. I could hardly breathe. The Clark Sisters. We were only a few houses away when Vonetta said, "Hey!" I could feel Fern wanting to leap out, ready to call out, but I pulled her back and shushed them both. "What about their rights?" Vonetta said.
"Yeah, we know about rights,"
Fern said.
"Just shh,"
I said. My heart was pounding. "They're panthers. They're grown," I said, although I didn't think Cecile was truly a panther. "They know their rights."
"But,"
I told Vonetta to be quiet. We were now coming up on the house and all the patrol cars, lights flashing. Cecile was almost as tall as the policeman who walked her to a flashing patrol car. He bent slightly to tell her something. She said loudly, "Kids? I don't have no kids. They belong to the Clarks down the street." She wouldn't even look at us. We were now closer, where the police could really see us. With my shoulders, arms, and legs exactly like hers, Vonetta's I don't care eyes exactly like hers, and Fern, a smaller version of Vonetta and me, I said, "She's not our mother. I'm Delphine Clark. I'm Vonetta Clark.
I'm Fern Clark.
And we live down the street.
With Pa and Big Ma.
Yeah, down the street in a blue stucco house.
Not with this lady, I said.
Not with her.
Surely don't.
They had already pushed Cecile down into the back seat of the car. I said to my sisters without looking at Cecile, come on. We walked past our mother, walked with our bag of fried rice and chicken wings as far as we could without looking back, my heart still pounding and the smell of the fried food making me sick. Why had the police arrested Cecile? She wrote Send Us Back to Africa poems and movable type poems. She didn't write Off the Pig poems and Kill Whitey poems. That is, if writing poems were a crime. It was just as Sister Mukumbu and Crazy Kelvin were trying to teach us. In Oakland, they arrested you for being something, saying something. If you were a freedom fighter, sooner or later you would be arrested. Fern asked, why'd she say she didn't have no kids? She had to, I said.
Why?
They would have taken us away, split us up, and put us in juvie or something. Fern said,
I don't want to go to juvie.
Vonetta said, she sure said it really easy. Kids? I don't have no kids. It was like she said, cooties? I don't have no cooties. I reminded her, and we said we were the Clarks real quick, real easy.
I was following you, Vonetta said.
Me too, Fern said.
Well, we have to say that. Did you want them to send us to juvenile hall? Or call Pa and Big Ma and worry them to death? We'd have to wait in juvie hall until Pa or Big Ma came from New York to get us. You wouldn't like juvie hall. It's just like jail. By the time we turned around and started back, the police cars had driven off with Cecile and the two Black Panthers. I let us in. I couldn't tell from the living room what had happened between Cecile, the police, and the two Black Panthers. The door had not been kicked in like it had been at Hirohito's house. Cecile didn't have much in her house to begin with. Then I pushed open the door to the kitchen. Out of habit, Vonetta and Fern stayed in the living room until they heard me gasp. They followed quickly behind me and timidly peered in. Black and red ink was smeared across the floor. Torn and scuffed up white paper wings covered the floor. Drawers had been ripped out of the cabinets. Large and tiny blocks of metal letters had flown everywhere. Blocks of metal E's, S's, A's, and T's. Paper, ink everywhere. The printing machine toppled over, rollers knocked out. Legs from my secondhand stool cracked and split off from the wooden seat. All we could do was take it in. Vonetta and Fern were seeing the inside of the kitchen, Cecile's workplace, for the first time. I was imagining what had happened. How Cecile didn't want them in her house, in her workplace, where she only allowed me and only at a distance. That the police might have touched her papers or picked up her letters with clumsy cop hands. Cecile might have gone crazy like I knew she could have, instead of saying, I'm a citizen and I have rights. She and the Black Panthers might have demanded to see the policeman's search warrant. She might have reached out to protect her poems. The broken stool told me more than I wanted to know. I found three forks, two on the floor and one in the sink. I washed them along with three plates and we went back out to the living room. Vonetta spread Cecile's tablecloth and we sat down to eat. I said the blessing, asking God to protect Cecile while she was under arrest, and then we ate. Mean Lady Ming had thrown in two extra chicken wings, and that was good because we were hungry. Hungry, shook up, and tired. We have to clean up Cecile's kitchen before she comes home.
Why? Vonetta asked. We didn't mess it up.
We surely didn't, Fern said.
We're cleaning the kitchen just because.
Because? They said together.
because it should look right when Cecile comes home tomorrow. I expected a lot of lip from Vonetta with Fern on her side. I expected us to go back and forth, them saying, oh, no, we're not, while I said, oh, yes, we are. Instead, Vonetta asked, what if she doesn't come home tomorrow? What if they keep her locked up like Brother Woods?
Yeah, Fern said. They could keep her and never let her go.
They were right. The police could keep Cecile for days, even longer. My sisters waited for my answer, but for the first time, I had no straw to spin. I could only clear away the food, plates, and forks. I birthed a nation. I didn't care what Big Ma said about scrubbing like a gal from a one-cow town near Prattville, Alabama. Only turpentine could wipe away the black and red ink that had seeped into the linoleum floor tiles. I wiped up all the ink I could before we went to bed that night. Everything else, the paper, the metal letters, and the mess the police made, would have to wait until we woke up. The day had been just too long. When I pushed the kitchen door open in the morning, the room didn't look any better. Streams of sunlight shot through Cecile's cheap curtains and pointed out, Delphine, you got a whole lot of work to do. A lot, girl. I was set to do it. Pick up, put away, clean him up, everything. But I was still tired, which didn't make sense to me. I had slept even longer than usual. Yet all I could do was sigh heavily when I saw the inside of Cecile's kitchen. Everything that made me tall, able, and ready to do what had to be done made me sigh. I picked up the broken stool, the seat, legs, and scattered wood chips, then brought the pieces out to the trash can. There was nothing I could do about the printing machine. It was too heavy. I used all my strength to sit it upright on the floor. I wiped the rollers and laid them on top of the machine. Then I called Vonetta and Fern out of bed and put them to work helping me. Without a squawk, Vonetta gathered up all of the paper, and there was a heavy snowfall of paper. She made different piles. The scuffed and dirty papers went in one pile. The rally flyers went in another. The sheets of poetry with Cecile's poet name, Nzila, printed on the bottom went in another. Vonetta spent most of her time separating out the different poems, and in between, she read them. I had Fern hunt around the floor for the metal letters and put them up on the table where the printing machine once sat. I never realized how many metal letters Cecile had in the drawers and kitchen cabinets. She had boxes and boxes of them, large and small capitals and lowercase letters, different sizes and types of T's, some more boxy, some more curved, some slanted but not like Hirohito's eyes, slanted like a leaning flower stem on a sunny day, some O's and Q's and C's long and narrow, others round and squat, all sizes, all types, all over. Was this movable type like her poem? Each letter free to be flung to all four corners? Then Fern found two of Cecile's special letters, the one she used for her poetry name, the N and the Z. I found the I, L, and A. I polished those with a dish towel. These were a special type, tall and curved, hooks on the ends, the Z coiled back to strike like a snake. In all her collection, these were the only letters of this kind. I wouldn't be surprised if she had thrown out the other 21 letters, or if these were the only ones she had bought, just so that only her name could be spelled out with these letters. I mopped the floor once the papers, letter blocks, and mess had been cleared away. We brought all of the letters and boxes into the living room and spread out the tablecloth. We spent the rest of the afternoon sorting through Cecile's letters. It was like a game. Finding the right letters, the right type, the right size. I put the Nzila letters in one box by themselves. We didn't know if that was the right way, but at least it was a way. Vonetta took out one of Cecile's poems and read it to us. I think it's about us, Vonetta said.
Look at the title. I Birthed a Nation.
You might be right, I said.
Surely might be,
Vonetta said.
We should do this poem.
She read it again. It was a good poem for reciting out loud. The same way We Real Cool was a good poem for reciting. And then we joined her, each of us taking a line, one after the other. Then we chose our own stanza but recited the last one together. We decided Cecile's poem was in a way like Dry Your Eyes. We decided that it was about Mother Africa losing her children like Cecile had lost us. I didn't remind my sisters that Cecile had left us. Then there was a knock on the door and we froze. We remembered we were in Cecile's green stucco house where the Black Panthers had come and the police had come and Cecile had been arrested and we were supposed to be the Clark sisters down the street, not Cecile's daughters reciting her poems in her house.
We became like spies. I mouthed, "Be quiet," and hoped whoever was at the door would go away.
They knocked again. I put my finger to my lips. Then Vonetta popped up her head and looked through the curtain.
"It's Hirohito," she cried out, "with an Oriental lady."
I didn't know what to be. Mad at Vonetta for being her Hirohito crazy self. Relieved it was Hirohito. Nervous about the lady. I cracked the door open. Hirohito said loudly,
"Open up, Delphine. It's me and my mom."
His mother? I looked at my sisters. My sisters looked at me. Vonetta flapped her arms wildly, wanting me to open the door. I didn't want to, but I did anyway. Hirohito's mother was holding a pan with tinfoil over it. Then I felt rude and stupid.
"Hello," I said. "You can come in, but my mother isn't home."
I had never said that to anyone before. My mother, in a real way. Vonetta and Fern were all smiles. I closed the door quickly after they stepped inside.
"I know your mother isn't home, Delphine," Hirohito's mother said. "I know."
"She'll be home soon," I said. "Maybe tomorrow." The truth was, I didn't know anything about Cecile and why they had taken her or how long she would be gone.
"Look, my mom made this food and I'm hungry. Let's eat."
To that, Mrs. Woods gave Hirohito a slap against the head and said something to him in Japanese. He said,
"Mom, I'm hungry."
I was embarrassed that we didn't have tables or chairs. I certainly didn't want that going around the center tomorrow. We had been laughed at enough for one summer.
But Hirohito's mother didn't blink once when I said, "We always eat on the floor."
She put the tins on the floor while I got the plates, forks, and the biggest serving spoon I could find. Vonetta and Fern just giggled and kept asking Hirohito to say something in Japanese. He rolled his eyes. We sat down and ate fried pork chops, rice, and string beans. I wanted to eat nicely like Mrs. Woods ate, but I ate hungrily like Cecile. Hirohito ate hungrily also. He scooped more rice and string beans onto his plate, and seeing that I was nearly done, he scooped more rice and string beans onto mine. I couldn't look up at him. I just ate. Mrs. Woods said,
"We know the same things. We have to stick together."
Stories of the No-Sayers. I gave what few flyers Cecile had printed up to Sister Makumbu. She, Sister Pat, Crazy Kelvin, the ladies who served breakfast, and everyone else all knew that Nzila had been arrested. Sister Makumbu said we should stay with her until Nzila was released. It was funny how things changed. If Cecile had been arrested when we first arrived in Oakland, I would have called Pa and Pa would have made sure my sisters and I were on a plane back to New York. Nothing would have made me happier than to leave Cecile and Oakland back then. But we hadn't gotten what we came for. We didn't really know our mother, and I couldn't leave without knowing who she was. I certainly didn't want to tell Big Ma that everything she had said about Cecile for the past 7 years was right. that Cecile was no kind of mother and had gotten herself locked up to prove it. It was bad enough to hear Big Ma supposing out loud every kind of selfish trouble Cecile was tangled up in. Day in, day out, I'd never hear the end of it. And there was no telling Big Ma that Cecile was a freedom fighter, oppressed by the man. Day in, day out, Big Ma would give my ear a hurtin' over Cecile. No, I couldn't call Pa yet. What if Cecile were released tomorrow? I thanked Sister Makumbu for her offer and told her as quietly as I could that we were staying with Hirohito and his mother. I certainly didn't want Eunice and her sisters to know we were staying at the Woods' house. Although Vonetta promised to keep her mouth shut, I didn't think she could hold it in. Anything to make Janice jealous. Our mother will expect us to be home when they let her out. She won't be too happy hunting around town looking for us if we're not home. Sister Makumbu said we would be safer with Mrs. Woods than by ourselves. Sister Pat added, "The man is still watching the house." I asked Sister Makumbu